Thank you, Alan, and good morning to everyone. I'm going to try to set the stage for some folks who are really going to tell you about the science. And I'm going to do it by trying to put together the word resilience and the excitement that's come out of the study of resilience in relation to public health. In some ways, it feels like the precautionary principle in the 1990s, where something coming out of environmental science, if you will, or looking at not really science, more regulatory approaches, but looking at this from a point of view of the environment, comes to public health, and we say, oh, but we're doing that. Of course, precaution is something that we do, and yet it's true, but at the same token, there were some very important insights from the precautionary principle to risk management, to regulatory approaches, that really were valuable for environmental public health. And I think the same thing is true with resilience. We do resilience. That's the basis of what we do in many ways, and then I'll try to convince you of it. We're involved with the science of resilience, but we're not quite the same way that we hear from our friends and colleagues in environmental science, who are really thinking of this in ways that, yes, overlap with what we do, but at the same token are bringing new energy and new insights into what we ought to be doing. As you know, our title for the overall thing is healthography, the healthography of our area here and the area in which a lot of the research that you're going to hear about is involved, is the area of the Gulf. And this is just a simple look at the health indicator rankings. Only Florida does reasonably well here, and that would not be true for the parts of Florida that are along the Gulf, the Panhandle. We have an area in which health statistics, in terms of public health, is not doing well. We have an area with floods, so the ancient floods and fire, and I guess crabs. This is... something that I think is very important to us in public health. One of the insights from environmental public health in recent decades has been that there really is a unity between public health and the environment, that we need to be very cognizant of this unity, and the unity is something that's clearly and unfortunately been demonstrated through some of the disasters that have hurt this part of the country. So what are examples that basically make the case that public health is really focused on resilient? Well, I put a list here. You can have your own list, but just about anything we do, we can argue, is really part of resilience. Vaccinations obviously make the individual and the community more resilient when faced with an infection. Part of the vaccination issue, though, is one in which I can talk at age 75 about the loss of resilience. I need the flu vaccine perhaps more than younger people do, because if I get a flu, my organ systems are less able to buffer. If my lung gets involved, my kidney, my heart, et cetera, is going to be more affected. So I've lost some resilience in that way. And by the same token, my immune system doesn't respond as well to the flu vaccine. Older people are less likely to raise antibodies against the flu than are younger people. So again, there's two aspects of this. One, the, if you will, less resilient if I get the problem, but also less resilient because my immune system is not as good. And so one can look at the, if you will, Shakespeare's Seven Ages of Man by thinking of this as almost a resilience curve. You can't easily from here show it, but if you drew this as a curve off the top of the heads, you would basically say, well, if that's resilience, that development to an adult stage in humans and any organism is basically increasing resilience. That's what we do as we become more adult. And as we get older, we're losing resilience. And that's at the individual level. And you can think of this in terms of individuals. We're aging, if you will, to an adult human as a loss of resilience, as the challenge. And the eventual trajectory, obviously, is downhill and death. That's inevitable. If you look at biomes, if you look at the ecosystems, the problem really is human activities. And it's ancient human activities. Agriculture. The first agriculture was one of disruption of natural biome. That's what agriculture really starts as and continues as. It's downhill is the trajectory in terms of our planet, potentially reversible. Obviously, the challenges today, global climate change, increasing populations, all of these challenges on natural ecosystems are making the downhill trajectory more and more of a problem, more and more of a worry to us, but something that needs to be reversed. If we think, however, of communities, we think of social capital, which I'll come back to later if this time, it's really multi-directional. Social capital in communities is such that it can go downhill and the community can go downhill because of it. Increasing the resilience of the community, increasing our social capital allows us to go in the direction upwards, and we all know plenty of examples of both. Well, what is it that we in public health should do well that's related to both to sustainability and to resilience? And I would argue there's a lot of things. One is that we inherently are multidisciplinary. There's the mantra which we all have that there are no major public health problems that can be solved by any one discipline by itself. And that's certainly true for resiliency and certainly true for sustainability. We're able to develop models that at least facilitate the trade-off between different types of areas. Again, sustainability is achievable. You really have to trade off between economics and jobs and all of the various, the environment and health and all of the other social parameters. You have to understand these trade-offs at least as you go forward with them. One hopes to find those things that don't require trade-offs at all. The multi-generational dimension that's present in sustainability is essential to resilience. You have to look past this generation. And again, maternal child health and well-being is a multi-generational approach. And anticipation of disasters, including responding to it in terms of not just fixing this disaster, but anticipating the next one. If you look at definitions, and we can play games with definitions and have lots of them out there, but definitions help if they lead to actions. Howard Frumkin has pointed out that there's really a difference between how we define health and how sustainability is defined in terms of, we don't include the multi-generational approach in our definition of health. There's nothing that has to do with time. Sustainability obviously has a time factor, as does resiliency. And if you look at resilience and sustainability, they're not really the same thing. I mean, I've sort of glossed over the fact that they're related. One example I'd like to use is a definition of sustainability that has to do with the relating to the old saw about whether the glass is half full or glass is half empty. For sustainability, the glass is twice the size it needs to be. Right? I mean, the rest of it is waste. We should right-size that glass. But for resilience, no. For resilience, you need a glass that is larger than the amount of water in it, because you need to be able to deal with the stresses, with the unforeseen disasters, with all these other problems. How much larger is a very important point. And again, I would argue that fits well into our concepts of public health. Well, that's out of place. But the Institute of Medicine has looked at the issue of the Gulf from a public health point of view. This is a workshop summary held soon after the Deepwater Horizon episode. The take-home points for it, lots of them. They included public health surveillance is essential, worker health and community health are linked, vulnerable population should be the focus, community should be involved in research planning and execution, and public health research must be disaster ready. I think there are things that we all agree to. My colleagues and I were asked to review the issue of oil spills in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it was very obvious that the initiatives needed included not only having protocols to be able to do the clinical evaluation, but we needed to be able to bank biospecimens, we needed to be able to monitor, we needed to be able to work at psychosocial interventions, and again, vulnerable populations were quite clearly important. One of the things that you'll hear about during the day is the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program, which is funded, focused on community resilience, and it's a project which tries to put together the classic federally qualified health center, look-alike centers that are working in communities to improve health with mental and behavioral health and with environmental health. There's a group of universities involved. You'll hear more about this during the day. There are community groups, the Louisiana Public Health Institute, and I'll run back to that slide that was somehow put in the wrong spot. And as you'll see at the bottom, it's a healthier, resilient community through regional partnerships that's crucial. Again, resilient becomes the most important term in terms of guiding what we're doing over the long run. If you look at environmental factors that influence human health, we call this sustainability, you can see some of them are chemical, and some of them are social economic, and you can add a whole bunch of other things. Environmental health, when you think of toxicology, has traditionally been, here's the chemical, what's the adverse effect. Environmental health in the broadest sense, environmental public health, does include all of the community issues. Putting them together has always been a problem. EPA for years has been trying to do what we call cumulative risk assessment. And beyond defining it as being all of these factors put together, it's not really been successful. Well, lately, there's been an approach, Ken Olden, who a lot of you know, who's a former head of NIEHS, Linda Birnbaum and her leadership now of NIEHS, and you'll hear from it, has been thinking about whether epigenetics, looking at methylation of DNA and other changes to DNA that occur, could be ways of integrating these, of being able to put them together in new ways that haven't been done before. And one hopes that as you'll hear of the future funding that is going to be going forward in the science, that this science of epigenetics will also be part of the future of looking at resilience from a public health point of view. So finally, let me get back and end with going back to social capital. This is, if you will, how we think of how communities are able to be resilient, to be responsive to disasters. And all of the things, the natural environment, the built environment, the organizations within the community, the basic health of the community, the economy, all of these pieces, and I'm sure you can add other circles and other wheels depending upon where you come from, are part of what we think of in terms of a community being able to be resilient in the face of what are the unfortunately inevitable future disasters that will affect this region. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. So I think there's time for one or two questions, if there are any. Thank you very much.